Before we get started with today's show, I want to tell you about another great ESPN podcast, Stanford Steve and the Bear. Stanford Steve Coughlin and Chris the Bear Felica put their unique spin on the world of playing the odds in college football, horse racing, and more. If you're trying to make a little money, you want to check out their latest episode where they break down lines they like, possible upsets, teams that are hot, and players to watch out for in the NCAA tournament. Listen to Stanford Steve and the Bear as well as The Right Time wherever you get your podcasts. Also, America's Caddy on ESPN Plus is hosted by our guy Michael Collins, the quick-witted, longtime caddy, comedian, and ESPN golf analyst, as he interviews the biggest stars in the game. America's Caddy is part travelogue, part golf history lesson, and part celebrity hangout, but full of laughs. Streaming now on ESPN Plus. The Right Time with Bomani Jones is brought to you by Goodyear, helping you discover the road ahead. Goodyear, more driven. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Right Time. My name is Bomani Jones. Thanks for listening wherever you get your podcast. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars, I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. And this is big, ladies and gentlemen. It is our first Foxworth Friday. So every Friday from here until will be Foxworth Fridays with Dominique Foxworth, assuming he don't say nothing to get us off.
Well, I'm excited. I'm excited about the first one, and I won't get us all fired. It's just going to be me. I'll never take nobody down with me. It's just going to be me. And honestly, it's going to be me and Gabe.
Yes.
This is recorded.
Yes.
So they're going to come for Gabe, too. Like, you knew better than to put that on air.
Yeah. Tony, too, man. For you people who was down at the Levitar show when it was on ESPN, who in the hell is Tony? Tony work with us now. You know what I'm saying? He going to have to go, too. That just so you know, if it comes down. But, like, for the people listening to this and for me, when we decided to expand to 3 days, we need to figure out what it was that we wanted to do with the third day. And Gabe's first thought was Foxworth Friday, right? And I am very thankful that you were willing to do it. And for the people who are listening, a lot of you guys have requested this and asked for it literally for years that we would have an opportunity to do more. So I am thrilled at the idea that we will be in this position to do more.
I got to be honest, though. I appreciate it. I'm happy. I'm excited. But a little ugliness boiled up inside me because I'm competitive as hell. And so I know that I'm one of the better guests. The numbers do well when I'm on. But now that I'm on every Friday, now I'm competing with the other 2 days. And I don't like my setup. I'm on Friday. I'm not going to have the best numbers on Friday. So, and then I had to kind of quell the competitiveness in myself and say, just have fun with your guy. You don't have to beat everything. You don't got to break everything.
Nah, but it's going to be strong, man. I think it's going to wind up being about the same, actually, because like that is one thing that we did with the podcast as the pandemic came around. And we just kind of looked at the numbers. And one thing that we figured out was that you guys are more likely to listen to me talk to my folks than listen to me talk to a celebrity. And so for a couple of years, I did a lot of interviews with a lot of musicians and a lot of actors. And it was in large part to kind of grow the audience, right? So somebody who might not have been down with me was like, oh, we've got this interview with Big Crit. Okay, we'll go check it out. And so the numbers wouldn't be as good as those, but I thought that it might broaden it out. But then we just realized, nah, man, the people want to hear us hang out. And so now we got Dominique Foxworth here posted up with us, hanging out.
Can't wait. I ain't got nowhere else to go. The pandemic, I know you've gotten swole and you've gotten some hair in the pandemic. I have watched a lot of movies and learned how to fix stuff. Like that. I've learned how to fix things. I always prided myself as the dude who was quick to call a plumber, quick to call. I don't mind writing a check. I'm not going to get into that nonsense, but I'm not that guy anymore. I fixed a hole in the wall yesterday. I'm just fixing all types of stuff. Yeah.
But you be YouTubing, Googling up your strategies and techniques.
Absolutely. There's no other way to learn. It's either that or trial and error. And I got a full-time job. I ain't got time to be figuring stuff out. It got to be a one-hit quit and be done with that.
I'm right there with you on writing that check, though. Like, for example, IKEA, when you go in there, they're like, would you like somebody to come and put this together? Yes. Hell yeah, I would like somebody to come and put this together. Never underestimate the value of a professional. Like, I remember when I moved out of my place in Durham, and the movers came because ESPN did the moving, right? So they sent all the folks to come and pack stuff up and everything else. And it was like this symphony of tape, right? Like all I would hear is just tape, unroll the tape, tape down, unroll the tape, tape down. And I looked around and I was like, man, this would take me 4 days to try to do. But these professionals, they do this all the time. It's the same reason I tell people, don't do your own taxes. Like, unless you go a 1040 EZ, those people do taxes all the time. You do taxes once a year. Never underestimate the value of a professional.
Yeah, I'm with you, man. I think about that all the time with, like, things the first time you ever did anything compared to, like, or something that you're good at now compared to how you do it now. Like, you learn stuff. You don't even know you're learning stuff. You're learning, picking up shortcuts. This damn pandemic made me have to learn how to fix toilets and fix holes in the wall and all types of other foolishness. A lot more cleaning than I'm accustomed to.
Pandemic has actually taught me how to live with broken things. Like, you got a wife and kids, so somebody got the man of the house got to come in here and rectify this situation. For me, it's some things where it's like, you know, I think, does this really need to be fixed? Does this really need to be changed? And the answer is probably not.
I've learned, like, I feel like my nonverbal communication is at an all-time high right now. Living alone, it's like you make most of the decisions, and so rarely does, I would assume, so rarely is something just out of nowhere just come into your life and change, like, what your plans were for the day. Right. You know what I mean? Like, your day kind of late goes out of the way it's planned. Yes. Mine never does. Like, with three kids, 10 and under, and my wife, like, at some point throughout the course of every day, and me in the basement trying to work, if I was, like, at an office, it's different. But at some point throughout the course of the day, somebody got a problem, somebody's fighting, something's happening, I got to break this up. And I've learned that there are things that you can do and say to make people less likely to mess with you. And it's just nonverbal communication. I'm going to be a master manipulator if I'm ever back in an office, because I know the right looks at the right time and the right thing to say. You got to walk in to a room and immediately announce that you are this close. You just got to announce it. You just got to start off.
In pandemic, you have leveled up as a daddy, basically.
Oh my gosh. It was me or them. It was me or them. It wasn't like a gradual improvement like you see with a team. They go from 1 year to the next. They got a little better and they got a little better. No, we were going down. Like, pandemic started. Like, yeah, we can figure this out for a month. And then at a certain point, we got burned out. My wife and I got burned out. And then the kids started winning. They started taking over. They was on their screens for 48 hours in a day. And then at a certain point, I was like, we can't live like this. And we had to make a comeback. So it was a classic movie comeback story. Right now, we are back near championship level household. But we, man, we was tanking for a minute.
Y'all lost 6 out of 7. Right, 7 out of 10. It was coming down there.
Our fans were looking forward to the offseason. They was getting excited about free agency.
Toby Wigway, when he was on with us, he said that having kids taught him about the concept of loving your enemy. He was like, they are not on the same team as you. He's like, that's where it comes from. Loving your enemy comes from having kids.
I heard that episode. There was a lot I could relate to. And I also think, like, saying, like, I could dominate in the office or whatever, like, I understand people better now. Once you have kids, I think that's one of the big values. And kids aren't for everybody. I'm not somebody who's going to be out here proselytizing parenthood. Like, everyone needs to have kids. But kids are the same as adults. They just are less interested or less able to hide their true intentions.
Yes.
So, like, I've learned so much about how people think and act. And even myself. Because my kids don't even try to trick me, and they don't even try to trick themselves. I think it's another thing that we do is we convince ourselves why we're doing something when that's not actually the reason we're doing it. Like, my son, he was painting some toys with my wife's nail polish the other day. I was like, why are you doing that? Because I ain't like the color. I thought I was asking some profound question about why he's just doing something that he knew was wrong. He's like, nah, I ain't like the color, so I painted it. Like, yeah, that's pretty much it. Like, he's just cut to the chase. I'm trying to have some deep conversation and understand this on some psychological level. But nope, just doing it because he wants to.
Nah, man, you the little homie's favorite person, boy. Whenever we do it, highly questionable. He always got to come say what's up to daddy when we get started.
No, that's not because I'm his favorite person. That's because attention is his favorite thing. he's getting attention from us because we're here. He's like, oh, new faces for me to perform for.
Whenever the world comes up, I got to come up there and hang out and get introduced to the Foxworth clan.
You'll love them. The oldest is really smart and like looking for challenges all the time and wants to be like, has that part of me that wants to be the best at everything. And then my son, the second one, is like trying to be the opposite of her. Like, he's obviously also very smart and talented, but he's like, nah, I ain't doing it that way. I'm going to do it the other way. And then the youngest girl just looks up to her brother. So she just runs around the house after him doing all the same stuff. It's hell of a dynamic in here.
Which one of them going to be the one to give me the bird like your wife did at Dan's wedding? I'm trying to let that go.
That's the number two. No problem. Guaranteed. I don't even remember which. Oh, did you insult Lauryn Hill? Is that what happened?
Yes. I said something. I didn't insult Lauryn Hill. Yeah, I insulted the Lauryn Hill Unplugged album, which we have been insulting for like 20 years.
She took it that, I mean.
Yeah, yeah, she was not here for it.
Nah, she's very personable. So she, and she's also like attractive. So she gets away with saying and doing things like giving people the bird. But you, not moved on that. Still holding a 2-year-old grudge for one little finger.
It's a year and change. And I guess it is closer to two. Yeah, you're right. I just hope he's still cool. I didn't know if you've ever been in this. I've been in a situation, man. I lost a homeboy because his wife got mad at me one time and I ain't talked to him since. And she was tripping.
Yeah, you know what I mean? And to be clear, let's hear the story. What happened?
I can't remember exactly what it was, but we were talking about something and I gave like, it was a little bit of a sharp response, but not like cutting, you know? Yeah. And it was kind of a, well, this, it, that, and then went back on. She was like, oh, okay, it's like that. And I'm just like, wow, I didn't think this was going where it was. And so we walking out, like I walk them out to their car and I'm saying goodbye and I'm saying goodbye to him. As I'm trying to say goodbye to her, she shut the door in my face.
Damn.
And then I hit him up. I'm like, yo, man, I ain't really been hearing from you. What's going on? He's like, yeah, you know, it's just, it gets weird when I talk about you at the house. And so I was just like, oh, okay.
Damn.
It's like 15 years ago. We ain't cool no more. And at first I was like, hey, man, it's your marriage. It's your wife. I understand priorities. Like, I didn't take it personally. But I did kind of look at him like he was a sucker. How about this? Just don't talk about me with her no more. Like, I'm not the other woman. I'm just a dude.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what happened in that situation, but I got to be honest. Like, my wife, obviously, she's just joking and she likes you, but if she was like, nah, you done with Bomani? Yeah, I'm done with Bomani.
That's the thing. I get that.
I thought you were saying he was a sucker for that.
No. I think he was a sucker for this wasn't enough for that. Right?
Gotcha. Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, if I come up in your crib and been disrespectful to your woman or something like that, like disrespectful, okay, get that. This wasn't that. Like, this is one of those to be like, you know, I think you might be overreacting. Except the problem is, I don't know their life. And I think you might be overreacting in his house may be the poorest of strategies. And based on her reaction to what I consider to be this very small thing, that is probably what it is.
I think you might be overreacting is never the right strategy with any human that you're ever talking to. If they're really upset and you're like, you know what? You're overreacting. No one responds well to that. Like, there's another way to go about it.
Well, I feel like if you trust the person on the other side, right? Like, you can't break that out all the time, but the problem with that then becomes we got to let people overreact all the time. You know what I mean? Like, nobody to be like, yo, you kind of wilding right now, you know?
No, I feel you, but then maybe that's not the right person. If you are around them and you measure all their reactions as overreactions, you shouldn't be there.
That's correct. But even if it's not all of them, right? Every now and then, we all overreact, right?
Absolutely.
Like, every now and then, we all go a little bit too far. But I don't know when it is that you can tell people. Like, if you tell me I'm overreacting, I'm not going to bug out on you in the moment. That's not going to happen. I'm going to be like, okay, because people don't tell me I'm overreacting very much. Maybe I need to consider the fact that I am overreacting. Overreactors are not considerers. That is not, that's not how they do their math.
Oh, man. Another thing I added to my repertoire is patience. It's like, when I get angry, because, like, we all get angry, especially being around each other so much, like, I never address anything in the moment. It's something my dad taught me a long time ago. Not everything needs to be addressed. And it's taken me this long in my life to apply that because it's like, all right, in the moment I'm mad. If I wait and the next day I'm still mad, then we talk about it. But I wait and next day most of the time, chances are it was something minor. It was stupid.
Yeah.
And I moved on from it.
Yeah, like for me, it's about iterations on that kind of stuff. If this is something that might come up repeatedly, then I should probably try to say something early about whatever it happens to be. But if it's just a thing, chances are, if you can't just be like, yo, I didn't like that. If it's like, yo, what the f*** was that? Nah. Like, that last part ain't nothing good coming there.
Yeah, there's no perfect way to do it because the worst thing you can do is, I feel like the bad example of me saying to wait is like, it happens 5 times and then you bring it up and you think you was being a good dude by not bringing it up before, but they're like, where was you all these other times?
Yeah.
Are you just making a list?
Because that's the problem with me. I am good at letting things go in the moment, but what is letting go, right? It chances are it just goes somewhere else. And then finally, it's like, All right, this is my chance to talk about stuff. I have things that I would like to talk about.
I've always admired your memory. I've never thought about it being weaponized. And now I'm intimidated.
Yeah, but it ain't really no weapon. You know what I'm saying? Because once you get to the second thing on the list, conversations might as well be over. You know what I'm saying? After a point, the listening has ceased. And maybe this is cathartic for you, except it's not, because you want to be heard. You want to be listened to. You know?
Oh, my gosh.
It don't go, man. It's personal relationships. Yeah. They are
our relationship is changing now. We like a semi-partnership. So let's see how this go. I got to be honest with me. When I say or do something, let me know off the jump street. Don't
you're a football player. I'll worry about you guys. I wanted to get to Deshaun Watson a little bit later because I feel like we need to warm up before we get to, like, what in the world has happened there. I want to ask you this on some football, though. I have seen people make the argument that Bill Belichick has been acting in free agency in desperation by signing all these free agents. And my question for you is, wouldn't you be desperate if you were Bill Belichick?
Well, no. I mean, what are you desperate for? What? 6 Super Bowls? What is he desperate for at this point?
Respect. Well, I get you on that, but
I just feel like his team is depleted, so his team is desperate.
Right, exactly. Like, I feel like everybody in the NFL behaves as though they're desperate. You could make an argument they had the least talented team in the NFL last year. With the dudes who were actually out there?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to push back on that. Obviously, they performed well above what their record should have been, considering how bereft of talent that team was. But yeah, I mean, he had a lot of holes to fill. This offseason worked out. Like, he's a smart guy, smart coach, obviously, and a reasonable roster builder. But they got a stroke of luck because they were saving up their cap for this offseason. And then also, everyone's cap got reduced. So he was like the one-eyed man in the land of the blind in this situation with all this money. So, like, he's spending crazy, but he's not making any long-term commitments. I don't think it's as wild or, like, desperate as people are making it seem.
Nah, look, man, people are like, yo, whatever happened to draft and develop? One, they're not good at draft, and B, there's still going to be a draft, right? Like, the draft is still right around the corner, but he was just like, it ain't never going to feel again like it felt last year. We got to get some people in here. The move I think that matters, or the moves that matter. I'm curious your thought on this, because I felt this for a long time. I feel like a really good tight end is the most underrated player on the field. Like, a tight end that you can send him in the huddle and you don't know where he's going to line up can just flip up everything. And if you got two of them, oh, baby, it's on and popping. And guess who's got two of them now?
We went to the same place. I wasn't sure if you were going to say those tight end moves, but yeah, that's it. To be able to have versatile, like, flexible 12 personnel, like, it's terrifying. With Cam Newton at quarterback, and the name Cam Newton doesn't mean what it used to, but he's still a better athlete than most quarterbacks and still probably bigger than both of those tight ends. So, like, having a running attack and a play-action pass attack all built around that 12 personnel look with Nelson Aguilar on the edge is... It's going to be something. They're going to give that division that they own, they're going to make a run at taking it back this season.
Well, that's the thing that people didn't realize about the Patriots last year is they did what in these modern times is the equivalent of being like, fine, we're going to run the wishbone, right? Like, nothing else is working. We're just going to run the bone. How about that? Patriots are like, all right, we're going to line up in the eye and we're just going to run downhill and we're going to run Cam Newton at the goal line. This throwing thing, I don't know if he can throw. I know they can't catch. We are just going to run the ball. That is all it is. It's wild to me for the Patriots last year that it was like the greatest season ever for the reputation of Cam Newton, because it put on full display something that people had never noticed about Cam. It is like the positive flip side of his arrogance, which is he's never going to blame anybody. Like, he was out there in Carolina throwing the bums, except Cam Newton thinks he's so good that you should be able to win with him throwing the bums. So he'll never complain about the bums because he's supposed to be able to make the bums get to where they are. And so everything around Cam is going wrong and he's just coming out every week with no problem. It's on me. I got to get better. It's on me. Got to get better. And I think a lot of people had no idea that that's the way the dude is actually wired.
Maybe you're right. Like, I wasn't surprised by that. Like, that's how Cam's always been. I think what surprised people was, aside from that, is that, like, he's so likable. And again, it's not something that I was surprised by, but being down in Carolina and people only see him every now and then and so much was made of him not driving on that fumble and the way he reacted in the press conference after the Super Bowl, I think a lot of America is probably predisposed to look at the laptop situation and think of Cam Newton as something that he's not. But like, he is, I feel like coach's pet has a negative connotation, but Cam Newton is the ideal guy. Like, from a mindset to, like, he's a true football guy who reacts and behaves and speaks the way that football guys like. And I'm not shocked that he was such a hit in that locker room and such a hit with Coach Belichick, despite his odd choices in clothing.
He's also grown up, right? Like, I think, because I know, I mean, you talk to guys who played with him in Carolina early, they didn't love him. Right. Yeah. Like, it took some time for him to get it figured out. I think what happens, like, I was talking to a journalism class this week, and I was like, you know what made me a better interviewer? Getting famous. Like, once I got famous, or relatively famous at least, people were more willing to talk to me. Like, people, like, I wasn't just some stranger that was there asking questions. Like, people had bought into me before I walked in the room. Like, when you first get started with this, you're having to warm them up and everything else. And with Cam, when he first comes into league, what it meant to be like, I'm Cam Newton, means something totally different now. Like, now he's going in there with a bunch of dudes who grew up watching him and everything else. So he's got this super high opinion of self. They have a super high opinion of him, too. When you show up and you 22 and you're like, I'm the best dude in the room, them old heads is like, yeah, dog, we'll see.
Yeah, that's the same thing that happened with Tom Brady down in Tampa, but to a much bigger degree that I didn't anticipate. Like, I thought it'd be a little bit tougher, a few more growing pains, but I forget that those players have had a relationship with Tom Brady that goes 20 years. It's just been one way. You know what I mean? The same is true of Cam Newton. It's like, those guys who he's playing with have, like, known of Cam Newton and had a relationship with him for a long time. So it makes it a lot easier to kind of clear that fence, to build that trust.
Yeah, I ain't gonna lie. I had been waiting for the moment when Mike Evans was like, hey, dog, you ain't about to talk to me like that. Like, when it wasn't really going so well before they hit stride at the end of the year, I was looking at, like, them cats like, dog, I just met you, man. And I don't be screaming at you when you be missing.
Yeah. But I agree with you. And in the heat of the moment, things like that happen. But there's also, like, some level of respect that comes with being Tom Brady, where it's like he gets so much, and he's earned it, so much, like, leeway. It's unlikely that anyone's going to blame anybody or going to blame Tom Brady. So I think guys, that's in their mind. So it worked out for them this year. But there is a possibility that it could have gone wrong down there.
But it's also interesting when you think about this generationally, where, at least from what I can tell, the players that are, like, 25, 26 and under now, they didn't grow up getting screamed at the same way that the previous generation did. Like, there's still some screaming, right? But there isn't as much screaming. And when you think about it, the way Tom Brady gets in dudes' faces on the sideline, there is no longer a coach in the NFL who, at least in public, does that with his players. Tom Brady is, like, literally the only person in the league who can get away with addressing dudes like that, which is to say that he commands more respect than literally anybody in the league.
I mean, shouldn't he, though? Like, I mean, I guess maybe it sounds shocking because he's not a head coach, but...
Yeah, it's not even shocking. It's just, I think it's something that people don't really think about. Like, right. Just gradually, the screaming that we saw back in the day has just, especially in the NFL, you still see some in college, right. But it's just gradually decreased. So, like, on one level, we're used to it, therefore we see Tom Brady, and it's like, okay, this is what it is. But then you stop and look around, and you're like, wow, you know, nobody else does this.
Yeah, it doesn't look that way, at least. Like, we don't always hear the words, but guys do, like, get hype screaming, but they don't do, like, get your together screaming. Yeah. It's a different type of, it's like, we gonna do this, like, let's get focused, that type of stuff. And, like, right. Do your job is another type of screaming. And Tom Brady does some of that in-your-face stuff that we're not accustomed to anymore.
Well, he's a dude, I feel like, people just don't want to disappoint him.
Yeah.
You know, like, I think he does an amazing job. I talked about this with Nick Wright the other day. I think he does an amazing job of, like, while being Tom Brady, still being part of the crew. Like, he seemed like, you know, Brett Favre, like, when Brett Favre was with the Jets, for example, he didn't use the same locker room. Like, he had his own office. Like, he never spent any time with the actual roster because he didn't feel like it. He didn't have to, all that stuff. Brady is still, like, down with everybody. You know, he comes in, he introduces himself to people, even though you don't have to when you're Tom Brady, you know, and all of that stuff. Like, I am most impressed by the fact that he has never really elevated himself above the guys on the team within the context of their workplace.
It's not even he hasn't elevated himself. He has to actively, like, de-elevate himself.
Right.
Like, all the coaches and players, like, they are going to naturally elevate him because he's done so many things. So I remember during the season when Bruce Arians was being, like, publicly critical of Tom Brady. And at first I was like, that's weird. And then it hit me. Like, no, what he is doing is, like, super helpful for this team. It's like, it brings Tom Brady down to a place where the guys feel comfortable, because there is always an us in them in every locker room, and it's always the players. And, like, you, as close as you are with the coaches, as much you like the coaches, as much you respect the coaches, they aren't out there. And there is something about a team that's kind of like, when those practices and training camp get really hard, we all MF the coaches. Like, it happens. And there is a group, and sometimes there's a player in that group that's close with the coaches. We hate him. We don't respect him. We don't like him. We don't trust him. We hate him. And Tom Brady is already that guy. When he shows up, he's that guy because he's damn near 50 years old. He's won a bunch of Super Bowls. He's nothing like you guys. So he's already there. So they have to actively do things to put him back in that situation. I've heard stories about LeBron, like, being really aggressive with, like, going to guys' events, like when guys have fundraisers. Like, LeBron's a guy who's always trying to do Halloween and party with his teammates because he recognizes also he's above them. That's not healthy for the team if they know it. Like, you got to remind them, like, no, I'm one of you. I'm tired too. No, I didn't make that trade. Yeah, like that can't be healthy. So I think you're right. That's something that we don't appreciate in both of those guys.
Yo, you just got me thinking about this. Can you imagine what it's like for the rookie the first time he go to LeBron house? You know what I'm saying? Like, you just got out of college. You've been living in this dorm. Oh, you living God. In the flyest place that you have ever lived in. And you walk in the door. What is this carpet made out of?
I feel like I saw an Instagram video where LeBron had a little LeBron house made in his backyard for his daughter.
Yes.
I just envisioned the rookie walking in and going straight to the little house. Like, yeah, I'm going to stay here. It's a warm-up mansion, an appetizer mansion before I go into the real house.
Yeah, well, there's nothing quite like when you walk into a crib and you just ain't ready for what that crib is about to be. We have all been there at some point in our lives where you walked into somebody's house. I'll never forget this one. So my mother is an economist. She's been a department head and dean for a very, very long time. She's retired now. And a gentleman who was on the faculty, I guess, for lack of a better term, under her at one point, he had gotten a different job and she went to his house for a party. Now, you got to understand, the Joneses are pretty minimalist, right? Like, we're not really into stuff and trappings, especially my parents. Like, my parents old, and I'm having to, you know, like, it's okay to, like, spend extra on the nice one. Like, you ain't really got it. But, like, saving money is a game to my mama. It's a lifelong, it's a lifelong competition for her. Like, it's not simply being cheap. It's that this is, like blood in, blood out. Like, yeah. What she got in this game of saving money, like, she enjoys the process. Like, this is what she's about, right? And so the conference was in Atlanta that year, and they went to this dude's house, and my mama came in, and this is like, it had to be late. Me and my man George were there. George will never forget this. She just could not stop talking about this man's house. Like, I don't even fully remember the details of the house, but she was talking about the maids. Like, there were maids and all this stuff that was there. Because, like, when you are an economics professor, you can make a lot of side money, like, doing research, like, government-type stuff, you know? And so, apparently, this dude had hit it big somehow. And he had, I actually remember, I'd never seen this look on her face before. I'd never seen her glowing. And I'll never forget the last line that she offered in reference. When he worked for me, he was a member of the Socialist Workers' Party. Like, the crib just totally blew her away. Like, when you walk in somewhere, you just like, yo, what is this? Imagine it being LeBron's house. Because, look, that's been your house before, right? Like, when you got your first Superfly crib and your people from wherever, like, who weren't ball players in the world, that first time, like, after a while, you start just looking at their faces when they walk in.
Oh, and you take great pride in it. I remember my rookie year when Champ had a pool party. It was like the second day we all got there from minicamps. He had a pool party, and like a damn dummy, I brought a bottle of like Grey Goose or something, because like you don't come to a party empty handed.
Right.
I walked in with the bottle. He looked at me like I was stupid. It was like put it over there somewhere. I was like, I don't even want to come empty handed. It's like very attractive people everywhere. The house opens, like you open the front door. This was like one of a few houses that he had when he was in Denver. His house in Atlanta is actually a little more modest now, but the ones in Denver, you open the front door and you can see all the way through. And that's a hell of a flex, because that grandiose feeling when you first walk into somewhere, you know, you walk in and it's like a wall in front of you. It's different. You walk in, uh-huh, and you see straight through to the kitchen, through the dining room, all the way back into the pool with a bunch of like bikinis jumping in and out. I was like, yeah, I'm in the NFL. People ask you, welcome for the NFL moment. It was not going up against Randy Moss or covering Jerry Rice in practice. Like, no, it was the second day of minicamp when I walked into that house and saw everything that was going on. And we could have Gabe play the music for another story later, but we won't do that.
No, that would have made me want to leave there and immediately go in the gym. Like, I got to step my something up. this is what might be on the other side.
You better believe it. I got so many stories about that first year that I spent. Champ, for whatever reason, took a liking to me and we became really close. And so I got to tag along and just get all the benefits as if I was the future Hall of Famer. I'm not, but I'm the friend, and it's a pretty magical experience.
I tell you, the Denver Bronco, I've always been curious about, this is before, I'm pretty sure before you got there, for brief moments, Cliff Kingsbury was on a few rosters, right? Practice squad guy just at the end. But still, he was Cliff Kingsbury, right? Imagine being a woman and Cliff Kingsbury rolls up and starts spitting that rap, and he a smooth dude on top of it, right? He get there, he starts spitting that rap, and they with it, and then they're like, so what do you do? And he's like, you're not going to believe this, but I play quarterback for the Broncos, which is technically true.
Yeah.
Not in the way that she is going to hear it, but it is technically true.
To be completely honest, he has to say, I am a quarterback for the Broncos.
Yeah, yeah. And I guess in the internet era, it's a little bit trickier. But back in the day, the I play for the blank lie, people were making that work at colleges that they went to. I got a cousin who went to Florida State when Deion was there. He's like, yeah, I stayed telling him I was on the team.
It's like 120 guys on a college football team, too. So
yeah,
he might have been.
And there's no easy way to check on it. Like now, that lie comes down. Like, you ever see them stories about these cats, the imposters? Like, there was one imposter who, he was pretending to be Vince Young, right? There's another one that was pretending to be Ben Roethlisberger. And I read these stories, and stories would always be about these women, and they were very sympathetic stories about how it was that they were misled and how they had been lied to, you know, by these horrible, manipulative men who pretended to be rich and famous and so forth and so on. But the problem is, those stories also always have pictures of the person who is pretending to be Ben Roethlisberger or pretending to be Vince Young. And I do not condone lying, but at some point you kind of got to look in the mirror or go to the optometrist and ask yourself how it is that you ever believed that this person was Vince Young. And I'm just talking optically, like never mind all the other red flags that should have been there. I'm just talking about optically. But the story is always these horrible men. How could they do that to these poor, innocent women? And I'm like, yeah, that too. That is also, I see why that might be the approach that you would take. But at no point in the interview did you hold up like side-by-side pictures in their face? Like, look, which is the one that you met?
When you want to believe something, you want to believe it, man. It's the mind is a powerful thing. Can convince you of many things that aren't true. They wanted to be with Vince Young, so they was with Vince Young until they wasn't.
I was trying to figure out a way to smoothly transition
there,
into this.
There is no smooth segue.
There is none. So we got Deshaun Watson. There have been, as of now, I believe, two civil suits filed by massage therapists who say that he went a bit too far in his receiving of massages. Our industry has got to be having a collective all hands, how are we going to handle this meeting, right? Because the most sought after football player ever, you know, he's not a free agent, but you know what I mean, right? Like, in that context, we've never had anything like that. It was the dominant topic of conversation. And now this has been laid on top of it. And I'll give people a little background. I understand that some people understandably and logically draw the conclusion that he wants to leave the Houston Texans, and now suddenly this comes out. Except my understanding from talking to people in Houston is that this lawyer, who does not have the greatest reputation and has quite a backstory that you can Google, but he is no fan of the Houston Texans.
Right.
Like, he is not the guy that would go ride in the name of the Houston Texans. And so we have two allegations here.
The third lawsuit has been filed against Deshaun Watson.
Okay. I have been told that it's a lot more than three.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's a lot more than three. Now, I think that, like, collectively we have a tendency when we evaluate these things, especially with allegations of sexual misconduct, that the volume of allegations very much informs whether people, like, if 15 people come forward and say that you have done this, we are not going to believe that all 15 are lying. You know, like, when the one comes up, we may raise some questions. But, like, did you read the complaint on the first one?
Yep.
What made me stop and say, oh, we might need to talk, was apparently, if you have not seen this, this woman says that she is on Instagram. She's a massage therapist.
Right.
And she got a direct message from Deshaun Watson saying that he wanted a massage. And the woman says she found that to be strange because you're Deshaun Watson. You've got access to all the massage therapists in the world. And so Watson then says he did not want a sports massage. He just wanted a massage for relaxation. And I always feel like the end of, like, how you feel at the end of it is the part that matters. But right. Okay, there we go. He said he wanted for relaxation. She does her work at her home. He came to her home but insisted that no one else be there. Again, this is all per the complaint.
Mm-hmm.
He insisted that no one else be there. And she said that she was a little uncomfortable with that, but she went with it. And she said that she goes and leaves and comes back, and he's laying on the table, and all he has on is a towel covering his private parts. And if that were the case, what I find wild about that was, I take all my clothes off when I get a massage, but you don't start on your back.
Yeah.
Right? Like you start on your stomach. So anyway, she's giving him the massage, and she said that while receiving the massage, he kept directing her toward his penis, and then at points, like the tip of his penis was made visible, and she said it became clear to her that he wanted sex. And that she got kind of, I think she said she got shaken up. She was crying, you know, and all these things. Said he wound up leaving. She said that he sent him text messages apologizing after the fact. This is what the complaint says. I'm assuming if they say there were text messages exist. We'll find out ultimately what has happened in this case. But when it said that he was like hitting up a random person on Instagram, there are even apps that you can use. Like, there's an app that I use where they'll send the massage therapist to your house. This is going to be a thing.
The newest complaint, here's a quote from it. Luckily, we are recorded, so Gabe can make decisions about this. Sexually assaulted and harassed plaintiff by forcing her to perform oral sex. That's the third one. Says that Deshaun Watson sexually harassed and assaulted the plaintiff, alleging, and forced her to perform oral sex. I mean, that gets even more graphic and unsettling, and I know that has nothing to do with Instagram necessarily, but like the earlier accusations were different from that one. Not that it's any more or less concerning, but the numbers is what you talk about, like the volume. Like that is what really gets people to raise an eyebrow.
Yeah. Think about it. With Ben Roethlisberger, all we needed was a second one. Now, of course, that situation, like the law actually got involved with it, you know, so we worked with different data points on it. But this looks awful.
Yeah.
As of right now, it looks awful for everybody. And if you're Watson, who has spent his offseason getting on Instagram but not saying things, even if it's a denial that people hardly believe, you're going to have to put your face to something at some point.
He already put out something, didn't he, where he said he looks forward to clearing his name? Like, I remember reading
that. Yeah, he put out a statement, but I'm saying,
I'll specifically talk to the accusations.
Yeah, he's going to have to put his face, like, you know, there's a danger, obviously, for a person in that situation to say it too much, because anything you say can be used against you, right? But I don't think, especially given, you know, where he is in his career, you know, all the stuff we were talking about before this, I don't know how long he can just hide behind statements. Like, he gonna have to put, especially a guy with the reputation that he has had for being the good dude.
Yeah, and I mean, the reputation, I think, probably helps him some right now, but it feels to me, it's hard to gauge where we are as a society, and it feels like we've moved closer to a place where we believe women when they make these accusations. So, like, this, I think, right now, it doesn't feel to me, and maybe I'm using the wrong gauge or barometer, but it doesn't feel to me like Deshaun Watson's reputation has taken the hit that these accusations, should they be true, will take. Like, normally accusations like this, I feel like, pop up and people are quick to, like, turn on the guy. And it doesn't feel like, it feels like whatever goodwill Deshaun Watson has built up, it's protecting him right now, to me, at least that's what I see.
It's early, though.
Yeah.
Like, you think about this. This is 3 in 2 days, and I would assume that the second and third didn't just call yesterday morning. I find that highly unlikely that it played out.
You think it impacts his trade situation at all? Not that that's the most relevant thing right here.
No, but it's not the most relevant, but I do think it is interesting. What risk would you be willing to take? So think about this. You remember when Lyle Collins, offensive lineman for the Cowboys, was in the draft, and his ex-girlfriend, shortly before the draft, was murdered. He was not a suspect in this case. But this is not, I believe this is coming off of Aaron Hernandez. And basically, he was supposed to be a top 15 pick. And teams had no idea what to do. And what Collins people told them was, take him in the first round or don't take him at all. You know, because like this wasn't going to be a thing where you wound up getting a steal. And so after he went undrafted, the Cowboys did their research and determined it was all good. And they signed him to what was a pretty good contract considering the circumstances. And then it went from there. But he wasn't even a suspect in that crime. And teams were petrified of drafting him as a result. How could you comfortably trade for Deshaun Watson right now? Especially at the price.
Yeah, I guess you're right. I have a hard time convincing myself. It's about the fear of the backlash. It's certainly not about the teams or the owners or the coaches or the GMs. In my view, it's not necessarily about them caring about the case as much as about fearing what's going to happen if they're seen going out to sign this player. And I think by and large, they'll be okay to deal with whatever backlash they get, assuming that Deshaun Watson, like these are civil cases, assuming that Deshaun Watson is on the field and can ball out, they'll deal with the backlash, I think. I don't think it impacts it.
Well, think about this part, though. Jameis Winston was suspended for, was it 4 games or 6 games, on the heels of the allegation that he got an Uber with a woman and got handsy with her, right? There seemed to be some negotiation on the punishment to keep it going. That's one allegation. What is the punishment from the NFL if there's found to be some basis for this? What is the timetable for the NFL to explore this? Because if it's like one suit, then the NFL can say that they're letting the process play out and then they go look into it and they're fine. If this turns into 7, 8, 10 or something like that, can you even bring him to training camp? Like, I really, like, because I'm with you. Maybe you can, right? But I don't know.
I mean, you won't get much heat from the city that you're in, I would guess. Maybe not. Yeah, maybe not. Maybe times have changed. But I remember when the stuff happened with Ray Rice. Like, you remember the local fans cheered him when he showed up at practice. Like, it's something different about knowing he's your guy and he's going to do what he can on the field for you.
I don't think the media is going to be as accommodating as it would have been at a different point in time. Like, I don't know what to do with civil suits. Like, you and I both, I think, are in the same place. But, man, it's just more and more.
It's not about race, obviously, but like I, as someone who is black and experienced this world as a black person, I find myself like feeling, wanting to like be an ally in these situations and understand oppressed groups, and women fall into that category. And like the recent kind of uptick in violence against Asians, like fall into that category. So like I find myself wanting to be there, but there is also that idea that like there's a challenge. It's a civil suit and you don't know necessarily what exactly happened and you want to be fair to everybody, but you also understand that sometimes this is a perpetuation of decades of being disadvantaged. So like you don't want it to all come down on one person in one case in one situation, but you also don't want to be a part of the problem in perpetuating those things. So like I find myself instinctively believing the person making the allegations in these cases. And being annoyed by anyone who would try to tell me to like, no, hold on, wait till you see all the facts. And I don't know that there is a right way. Maybe that's why I'm uncomfortable having this conversation, because I don't know how to handle these properly and not feel gross after I'm done talking about it.
Yeah, I do. Like, wait for the facts guy is always too aggressive. Like, that's always my problem with wait for the facts guy, is that he's always too aggressive in saying that, because there's a real basis for it. You know, like, what we have seen is the case of the plaintiff, the case of the prosecution. When we are actually judging and evaluating these things with people's lives on the line, you don't get a verdict after that, right? Like, they don't take the halftime score on that thing. Somebody gets to come on the other side and say their part. And so I think that it is legitimate and fair for people to say, wait. Right. The problem is, wait for the facts guy isn't really all waiting for the facts. It is, I do not believe this woman person. And then it comes down as wait for the facts guy. My thing is, I don't need to have an immediate opinion on these things. And honestly, what I think happened really doesn't matter that much. How we react to the unfolding events, at least in like my public position, is the thing. Whether I believe that person or not, I know as a society, where we're torn is we need to do better by believing women when they say these things, right? When they make these allegations, just by knowing the math on it, we need to do better on it. But at the same time, the basis of our justice system and thereby a lot of our morals as a society is with the notion that we got to hold off on these things. And that's where like sexual assault and those things in court becomes such a tricky thing, because when women accuse men of sexual assault, it would be one thing if the response was, I'm not sure, as opposed to, that didn't happen that way, you let him on. So, you know what I mean? That's a totally different space. But, like, if we were in court, we would be obligated to start from, I don't know. But there's no real space to say, I don't know. I do know this, though, logically. There's no good explanation for, I was looking for masseuses on Instagram and I demanded nobody be there. Like, no, you should be bringing somebody. You're going to have a hard time selling me on the idea that if that night went as alleged, which I would assume they would be able to document because it was all based on communications, right? If that night went the way that it went, then he absolutely showed up looking for sex. Like I have no doubt in my mind about that. I feel confident saying that. He did not show up for a massage. And the bottom line is, her plan was conducting business, and you showed up and used that as a false pretense, then you wrong. I know you wrong for that.
I think it's probably important to at least hedge off some of the defenses that I suspect will be coming. It's like, what did you expect when he hit you on Instagram? Like, it's not a fair thing to say to her or to anybody in that situation. And I do think that some people will make assumptions about these women that are not based on anything. And it is often the wait for the facts guy who is making that. So I think it's fair to throw that back in the wait for the facts guy's face. And sorry if I'm constructing a straw man, but we've been through this enough times that like we've seen this playbook before. It's like, you can't be casting aspersions about the women if you're also wait for the facts about the accused guy. Does that make any sense?
No, it does. And I also think, though, a key detail in this that will probably come up with some people is these people seem to be strangers, right? Like, they seem to be people that he did not know. And that's an important point, because it is not a situation where it would be reasonable for Watson to presume, well, if she said I could come over,
I don't think this was some big misunderstanding. That's like, you know what I mean? Like, I don't think this was like some miscommunication. I don't think Deshaun knew I don't think that they got there expecting different things and were surprised when the other person thought something differently. And I just don't think that's a fair way to look at that.
I don't know how it's going to play out. It's entirely possible that this woman could be lying. Like, that does happen. It happens very, very rarely, even to the rich guys. It happens very, very rarely. So we can let this play out, but this looks really, really bad right now for him. He said he didn't want to play for the Houston Texans no more, huh? Maybe not. But ladies and gentlemen, this is Foxworth Friday. We will do this every Friday. Dominique Foxworth, check him out at theundefeated.com. Also, we have chosen our book for the Right Time Book Club, Kane Mutiny, How Miami Overturned the College Football Establishment by Bruce Feldman. It's a book looking at the rise of the Miami football dynasty from 1983 through the early 2000s. We will start the book club on April 12th. That's when we will have our first episode. Our guests will be Spencer Hall, Joel Anderson, Alonzo Highsmith, who played on those teams, and the author, Bruce Feldman. So, every other week, we will go into the book club. Once we get started, get that book now, Kane Mutiny by Bruce Feldman. And ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much for joining us here on The Right Time. We do this 3 days a week. My man Gabe Bassane handles everything behind the scenes. Thank you, sir. Remember, subscribe to The Right Time. Rate us, review us, give us 5 stars. You only give us 4 stars. I'm inclined to believe you are a hater. We'll talk to you guys in a couple of days. Take it easy.
Thanks for checking out The Right Time with Bomani Jones Podcast.
You can listen or subscribe on the ESPN app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
The Right Time
with Bomani Jones.